Hello and welcome to Clear the Air with me, Jess.
And me, Kaylee. Let's Clear the Air with Jess and Kaylee will be available on all platforms where you listen to your podcast. The podcast is there to discuss all things personal, mindset, political, female, and a mass of food sharing. So make sure to tune in to us every Tuesday. Thanks, guys.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Let's Clear the Air with Jess and Kaylee. Me and Jess are so, so excited to be welcoming Lynn Creeley to the podcast. So I'm just going to tell you a little bit more about Lynn and then I'm going to let you guys get straight into the pod. So Lynn is a mental health champion, counsellor and author of four books that give advice and hope to sufferers of mental illness and their families, including Hope and Anorexia, Hope with OCD and Hope with Anxiety. A mother to twin grown-up daughters, Charlotte and Samantha, and a grandma to Charlotte's six-month-old twins, Georgia and Reggie. Lynn's passion for mental health awareness came through the battle she faced with Samantha, who suffered with anorexia in her teens and obsessive-compulsive disorder in her early 20s. Lynn works tirelessly to break the taboos around mental illness, making sure that no family ever feels alone in their struggle, whether through Lynn's unique and personalised approach to counselling or through her books and awareness raising. More recently, she has produced a short film co-written and acted in by her daughter Samantha, A Day with OCD, which is a satirical but equally sensitive look at just how debilitating living with OCD can be. It's been so well received that the next one, A Day with Anxiety, is in the making. Lynn is never happy than when surrounded by her family, husband Kevin, her girls, and now looks forward to combining her passion for mental health with a new chapter of her life as a grandma. We had the most wonderful, insightful discussion with Lynn, and I'm just so excited for you guys to hear it. So here we are, everybody, an interview with Lynn Creeley.
Hi, everyone, and hi, Lynn Creeley. Thank you for coming on our podcast.
And thank you so much for having me on, you two gorgeous girls.
We're all just a hot, sweaty mess right now, but we're getting through it.
You still look lovely. You want to see me?
You don't. We can vouch for you that you look lovely. So, Lynn, it's so lovely to have you on the podcast. Can you just take a minute and kind of tell us about yourself and kind of, you know, what's led you to being sat here today?
Okay, I will sum it up as quickly as I can. I've got twin daughters. They're now 31. At the age of 13, Sam was diagnosed with the early stages of an, oh, let me just turn that off, the early stages of an eating disorder and OCD. And we spent several years, private and NHS, to no avail. I took the very unorthodox decision to discharge her and work with her myself with the support of our GP, the school and family and friends. And to a degree, we didn't look back. It wasn't straightforward, probably the biggest learning curve of my life. But then as Sam went into recovery, someone asked me to help their daughter as I'd helped mine. And because they were having the same issues that we had through the system. And I've never looked back. They just keep coming. And that was where it all started, on the counselling side. And then someone else said to me, why don't you write a book? And I said, oh yeah, I can do that, easy peasy. Well, that was another learning curve. And Hope with Eating Disorder was born. And I followed on with Hope with OCD, Hope with Depression, and Hope with Anxiety. And now we're producing films.
That's amazing.
Which I can vouch for. One that I went to see, Hope with OCD, at the screening, and it was brilliant. And it wasn't just that, it was, you know, it was brilliant because it was informative, but you also put in a comic side, but it was also so hard hitting.
I must say that I didn't write that. My daughter Sam and her friend Meg wrote the script, so everything is owed to them. We put it together. It was all a bit of fun at the time. Never dreamt that it would end up with like a premiere and be shortlisted for festivals, and we would be now be doing A Day with Anxiety. But it depicts in a satirical way a typical day, because although Sam doesn't have an eating disorder, I think because it we've spent so long, the OCD became quite embedded in her and ingrained, and the eating disorder's gone, but she still does have OCD. And the film depicted in a light-hearted but equally sensitive way just how debilitating living with OCD is. And I think because we did it slightly differently, more light-hearted, I suppose, which is different to most of the short films that are out there, which do educate and raise awareness of mental illness, I think it's been really well received, really well received. So I'm really proud.
Yeah, it was so good. I think what's interesting for us all to know is when Sam was little, and well, you know, a young girl, and she you noticed the eating disorders, the OCDs. How did you figure it out? Like, because I know people around me, but their kids, they always say to me, I'm a bit worried about this person. They're so young, and you know, there's something here not right with the way they're looking at food. What is that warning signs for people?
I think for us, I mean, at 13, and you've got to remember this was 18 years ago, and mental health or eating disorders weren't as so well, that the stigma was huge surrounding all of those at the time. And I think at 13, you never dreamt that it would be your daughter would be the one that ended up with an eating disorder. And I think Sam is quirky and she is different, which is what's probably led her down the creative path. But I think because she, I forgot where I was going with this. I think she never really found where she belonged. And I think she went into the girls were always together in their sets at school. And then when they went into year eights, Charlotte went into the top sets with all their friends and Sam went into the bottom sets. And I think Sam lost some weight quite innocently at the Christmas of when she was 12 then, through a virus. And people started to say to her, you look really good, you've lost weight. And she thought, oh, I'm good at doing this. She wasn't happy in the sets that she was in. And that was sort of, you know, well, any of us, you know, if anyone gives you a compliment, you think, oh, and that's drive she wanted to do more. And I think it was about the May, it had started that Christmas, but I think it was about the May I started to realise that she wasn't having breakfast and she wasn't eating the kind of foods that she was eating, and she was becoming quite withdrawn. And her eyes, I think the biggest telltale sign is now, apart from a change in behaviour, is her eyes became quite dark. And it was almost as though, well, obviously the eating disorder had taken over inside her head. And it was two of her friends at school and Charlotte that actually came to me and said that they saw her throw her lunch away. And I thought then something's not right. And her weight was dropping. And that was when we started the journey.
I suppose it's particularly interesting for me. So I don't know if you know anything about my background at all, you probably don't. But I've kind of suffered on and off with differing kind of disordered eating since around 5. And so I spent most of my childhood chucking away my lunches and getting very good at hiding it in crisp packets in the bin at home. Or I know, like in year 6, at one point when I had to get dinner lady to kind of watch me eat to ensure that I was kind of eating my lunch and things like that. And it was just kind of what you said then. I think it is at that age, things influence you so easily. So for me, like you said, things like that, if anyone made a comment like that, that would strike me on. But there was also the control at that age. So it was like, I think there's so much going on that for me, I could control like what I ate or what I didn't eat. Or...
I think at the time, Sam, I mean, social media wasn't a thing then.
Yeah.
I think the internet had only just been born. So I think she'd gone into the bottom sets. None of their friends were in the bottom sets. And I think she felt out of control and she wasn't. And I think obviously having the compliment, and she put two and two together and got 5 and realised that if you didn't, you know, okay, so I want to lose some weight, I'll stop eating. And it was over a period of 6 months.
Yeah.
And it was when we went to Spain on holiday and we were all together in the July. I can remember the timeline. It was in the May that I noticed she wasn't eating, and we did talk about it, but again, I was very naive. She was cooking and I was thinking, well, she's cooking, you know, which is another sign. Are they eating it? No, they're not. No, she wasn't eating it. But at the time I thought, well, she's cooking cakes and that, she must be fine. But of course there's a double-edged sword to that one. But I think it was when we went away in the July as a family and I saw her in her bikini and then I saw how little she ate. And she cried when I bought her an ice cream and that was not Sam. And then I thought, I said to my husband, we've got a problem here. And that was when we started our journey, which, you know, looking back now, if you told me then that it would have taken me the lengths that I went to get her the right help, which in turn was it within our own family, I would never have believed you, because loads of things go through your mind, but you never dream that you won't be able to take them somewhere and someone will be able to help them. But I mean, that's with any mental illness, that's not just with an eating disorder.
No. And can you talk a little more about that decision, kind of that decision to do it more within the family and for you to do it yourself, kind of, I know, would you mind kind of talking about the reasoning behind that?
I think we were like 3 years in and they were 15 and it dominated every waking hour and probably every sleeping hour of our lives. And, you know, people used to look at us and think we had everything. You know, we had two beautiful girls. We still got two beautiful girls. You know, we had our own business. We lived a nice life. And then suddenly this bomb comes in and you know, goes off inside your house. I think it was more, we'd always been really tight as a family, and I was sitting in a family counselling meeting and Sam was the lowest weight and probably the worst that she'd ever been. My husband was quite angry, and Charlotte was just sitting there, she'd had enough. And we were all in our own places, we weren't together at all. And I just looked at the woman that was working with us at the time and I just thought, you know what, this isn't working, none of this is working. And I just got up and said, we're not doing this anymore. It wasn't as straightforward as that, but that was the decision. That I just thought, whatever all these, the way that, you know, I've learned is that you, and Sam says to me, you say that you give them, you show them a life outside of their illness, not within their illness.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what we work on, is building a life outside of the illness. And that was what we did. I mean, it wasn't straightforward at all, my God.
No.
Loads of ups and downs and ins and outs. But, you know, obviously I'm a great believer in fate, and whatever we went through has set us on this path. You know, all of us, Sam's a published poet now. She's she's written some very powerful poetry. You know, and then to be have books and making films and helping other people, because we've just finished, Sam works with me now on a part-time basis. She's a personal trainer, and she trains our clients after they've had a session with me. We've got a gym at home and she trains them, which is another thing that I believe, that exercise in the right way is a huge part in recovery.
Jess, you're a big believer in exercise and helping the mind.
I've always felt, you know, I went to theatre school, so there was a lot of eating disorders around me when I was younger. And I remember it didn't last very long because we had another tragedy that kind of wiped that out. But I was about 15 and I'd started throwing up my dinners and my lunch. And now I was living with Nan and Granddad, so I'd go to school and I would throw up nearly every time I'd eat my dinner. I'd go to the toilet and throw up. And then it wasn't until one of my mum's friends, when I came back home for a weekend, I was walking through a car park, my trousers fell down, and one of my friends, my mum's friends, because I think my mum was nearly blind at the time, had said to my mum, watch Jessica, because something's going on there. And about 6 months later, my nephew passed away with meningitis, and then I went the opposite way, was binging. So I'd sit in bed with chocolates, and it was always that control thing for me. If I couldn't control it, with childhood trauma as well, that was on the back of that. I think that was me. And like you said, Kaylee, you hook onto something you can control. And I couldn't control what was going on at home. I couldn't control and protect my mum. I couldn't do all these things. But what I could do was control what I was eating. And then the more skinnier I got, the better I felt. And especially in my ballet leotard, as you can imagine. So it didn't last long, but for the rest of my life, I always, whenever I got stressed, even up until the last year, I would say, even in lockdown, I did it. I was eating an orange and a meal a day, and it wasn't until recently when I let go of it, and I kind of thought, I'll eat everything now. If I feel like I just want to eat a bit of rubbish, I'll do that, and then I don't need to discipline myself to if you've eaten that, you must go to the gym. I've kind of calmed down with that, and I don't know if that's just age or something else, but I feel for the first time in my life that doesn't, my worth isn't being based on what I weigh. And I think with our industries as well, it's a very easy thing to get locked into, isn't it, Kaylee? Like, you always think people are looking at you for that. But I think on the other side of it, when it comes to having a control thing, I think a lot of the people I spoke to from school that had problems, or for my own thing, when I said, it never got to a dangerous point, but it was there. It was always about controlling, and you know, I felt if things were too much, I would control my eating because it was the only thing I could control. But I didn't see it like that back then. It wasn't until you kind of step away and you can have a look at your own thoughts that that's what it really is. And Kaylee, you said you've had similar things with that, haven't you? Like it's the
control. Yeah, and I've had it kind of differ like you, like where there have times where you've starved my body and times where then I've binged. And I think also food does consume a lot of our life, whether that's just generally in life, three meals a day, like food is everywhere. And as much as I have recovered to a certain extent, I can't say that it's not still a battle at times and battles throughout a day, because there is an element when you have an eating disorder where food is everywhere, whether it's constantly there on a plate looking at you, whether it's you go on a date or you go out with friends and it's, when are we going to eat this? Are we going to have a snack here? What are we going to have here? And when you're struggling and you have that issue, it just feels all consuming.
Overwhelming. But I think in my day, because I'm 57, when I was younger, you only went out for dinner on your birthdays. There weren't coffee shops and Starbucks on every corner, and you just went round to your friend's house, and food was breakfast, lunch and dinner, and we were brought up to have breakfast, lunch and dinner, and you were lucky if you had breakfast, lunch and dinner. Whereas now, like you say, you know, I find it a bit, everything is praised with food. You know, you fall over, you get a sweet, you know, you do well in your exams, you go out for dinner, it's your birthday, you have a birthday cake. You know, even when you go to the dentist, he gives you a lollipop when you leave. And it's all, I find that quite sad, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And the same with social activities. You go to the cinema, you popcorn, pick a minute, you know, social, you know, bowling, hot dog and chips, like everything, you know. It's not just like you said, go to your mates, go to the park, It's all, it is a lot of the time linked to food and things like that.
And the pressure to have the food. Whether people want it or not. And I think the pressure to conform, which is what I'm seeing, and it really does worry me, because predominantly my clients are under 25. Most of them are under 18, a couple of them are over 18. They've all got eating disorders apart from one that's got anxiety. But you know, within the younger generation now, it's all about the need to fit in. And then they're being someone that they don't want to be. You know, and then it makes them unhappy. And that's about, I spoke to one girl today, actually, she was 13. And she said to me that she thinks that the whole lockdown thing got the young kids on their phones more, because everything they did was on their phones. They could shop on their phones. They could, they spoke to their friends on their phones, they did their socializing on their phones, they did their homework on their phones, and they've almost become, and then all these food and everything pops up, and then there were the apps. And I think I've gone off on a tangent here, but it does worry me, especially with eating disorders, that these girls are, and boys, must remember boys as well, are influenced by these images that aren't real.
We talk about that a lot.
And that's I suppose the thing is, like you said, you have two pressures, because you now have the pressure, like you said, of conforming, and the fact that food is everywhere, social activities, really, to be out and to have some sort of social life, you have that around you constantly, with this also other pressure of social media looking a certain way, looking kind of completely unrealistic. And
yeah, you have these not meat and beauty standards and then kind of conforming and this food, I think it's, I mean, I find it quite scary. And that's as a 25-year-old who has been through kind of a lot of issues like that already. So I can only imagine for kind of teenagers and young people now within that, you know, I say my generation was just missed it. So we were kind of starting the internet and Facebook, but really it's anyone under me that was really in that kind of internet sphere. So yeah, I can't even imagine the pressure on them.
And there is, like, just before the beginning of at the beginning of the first lockdown, there was this thing called Glow Up.
Yeah.
Well, which I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, I think that I can't remember what platform that was on, but where they had to, like, glow up, whether they lost weight or changed their hair or did this or did that. But predominantly it was all aimed at losing weight. Who could lose the most weight? And it was almost like a competition within this, I don't know, this heading, Glow Up.
Yeah, I think that was
excessive.
I think it's BBC, if I'm honest. I think it was. I think it was BBC. Yeah. But it was the same as I remember shows when I was younger that I was obsessed with, like Super Size versus Super Skinny. Oh my gosh, yeah. I was obsessed with it. Yeah. Absolutely obsessed with it, and not in like a good way. Like, it's those shows, well, there were so many of those shows, especially churned out, like, not to say, but like from Channel 4 and places like that, there were so many. I do remember, actually, it's really strange, but I remember first realizing that I had a slight issue with food was when I was 12, because I remember there was a storyline on Hollyoaks. So I remember there was this like 6-month storyline about a girl called Hannah. And
oh my God, I watched that, and I watched it when she fainted or she collapsed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was at the gym on the treadmill. Watching that on my phone and I cried my eyes out.
I remember
it. And they were the first people to actually really approach it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because they didn't just do it over a couple of weeks and say, I've touched on that. It was like a 6-month long storyline, and it went from small things like chucking away your lunch and binging on a chocolate bar and then kind of skipping meals. And they progressed the story on. And as a young person, like I say, I was like 12 at the time. I remember genuinely being like, oh, that's not right. That is kind of disordered eating. Yeah. It kind of was a self-reflection on myself. So weirdly enough, I have a lot of praise for Hollyoaks for that, because genuinely as a young person, it did kind of raise awareness and make me aware of what was going on from kind of an outside perspective.
Yeah.
But just whilst we're kind of on the subject of that, I really wanted to discuss the impact on you and your family and kind of how you were going through all this. Because obviously, we can all appreciate what Sam went through and with the OCD and with having an eating disorder, but what was the impact like kind of on the rest of you within your family and kind of coping with it? And I don't know, did any of you kind of have elements of decreases in your mental health or declines that then needed to be addressed or helped with due to going through that?
I think at the time, my motherly instinct kicked in. Someone said to me once, what would you have done if you hadn't? Because at one point we didn't know whether Sam would make it or not. That was how bad it was. And someone said to me, what would you have done if she hadn't? And it immediately came out, and that was never a choice. I would have gone, I did whatever I had to help her. So going through it, it divided us as a family. We were this once happy family. Charlotte, her twin sister, was quite angry at one point. She's hugely supportive of siblings because, and knowing what I know now, perhaps she should have had counselling or somewhere to go. But having said that, their relationship is really tight. And I think that was what brought them through. And probably it was more Charlotte's, I mean, there's nothing more powerful than the mother's love, but coming out of it, Sam always says that, I'm going to get upset now because it brings tears to my eyes, but Sam always says that Charlotte was the wind beneath her wings. Mm. So, and to a degree, she still is, because Charlotte's happily married and she's got, Jess met them, she's got twins.
Oh,
my little grandchildren, a little boy with me, a little girl. They're 5 months old. They came to the premiere, didn't they? But there was no way that we would ever, I would ever do anything without all of them. But I think my husband never got it, and still to this day doesn't understand mental illness, but he supports everything I do, and he accepts the OCD. So I think Sam said something once, you have to accept to understand.
Yeah.
And I think once we all accepted it, we almost understood it, although we don't, because it's illogical and unreasonable, but you can't reason with something unreasonable. But no, for years, I mean, even now, you know, we're very honest. It ruined our social life because I didn't want to go out. Kevin didn't. We've got our separate friends, but we haven't got a big friend group like we used to, because they all sort of went off. No, it affected our life, it affected our business, because neither of us really were interested in it. No, it affected family life hugely.
Yeah, and I think that's an element.
And, you know, and it you could say we could harp on, and yeah, it was shit, really.
Yeah.
For many years, we had holidays and they were crap.
I think
evolved around the eating disorder.
But I think what a credit to you to keep battling and to keep understanding and to then pursue a career on that and to want to spread awareness and help other people is such a credit to who you are. Not just because you refer a lot to that mother's nature kicking in and helping your daughter, but it shows in what you're doing now that no, that's you. You're passionate and you are all caring for this and you want to help other people. So I think, you know, just a massive credit to you. Just take a second. it does, because if it was just about Sam, it would just be Sam, but you're not.
This has all found us, though.
Yeah.
If you told me what we would be doing now and everyone that, you know, and even the people that I've helped, and I've helped quite a few, the mums, I stay in touch with them, they're my little mini supporters, the kids, you know, I went to a graduation a couple of weeks ago of someone that was not very well, and they've just graduated, and, you know, I've been out for lunch with my clients years on, but they still stay in touch.
Yeah.
But I try and make it fun, because it is really depressing. And we don't have it's you know, my work is hard work and it is mentally draining, but I don't know, it's all found us, so now we're getting into the films. I just love it.
I think what's lovely in a lot of things, and I like my book title Silver Linings, what I love is that when you see people that have come through something really hard, I believe there's a reason why we have this, because it opens up something else. And I was watching something called the other day on a podcast, someone saying post-traumatic growth rather than post-traumatic stress. So when you've got this growth element from what you do and then it flourishes into something else, it can be a really beautiful thing. So,
yeah, that's a really nice way.
It's like,
because we've sort of gone from one thing, like the counselling, which was very small, and then obviously writing the books, and Charlotte came and worked with me for about 4 years while I wrote the book. She helped me, and then now to, I don't know, obviously everything else that we've achieved.
Like, you know, you never know what something can do to change your life, and I suppose how we deal with those things ultimately defines where our path in life can go. So, like, for instance, that really hard time for you and your family has now helped however many clients you've had through something else. And clearly us doing the podcast talking about things we've gone through, it's helping whoever it does, and it adds to purpose
and knock on effect, paying it forward.
But
I think well, at the time no one spoke about eating disorders. It was a bit, everyone shoved it under the carpet. No one really, I had hardcore friends, hardcore family, but no one, I had no support, like there was no one professionally. And it was all doom and gloom. Whatever books I ordered, you know, it was, well, you know, this is life now, this is it. And I just thought, this doesn't have to be it. you know, my saying in life is never accept that this is as good as it gets, because it can always get better.
I remember in 2019, I went to a broadcaster to pitch about a series we were looking at doing to do with eating disorders, and a documentary series. And I remember the feedback I got was, no one's going to watch something about eating disorders. And I was like,
in 2019.
Yeah. And then I wrote back an email just with all the stats on people struggling with eating disorders. And I was like, perhaps the people that are going to watch it, are those suffering? Yeah, I didn't get a response, but just felt that that needed to be said. So yeah, it was.
I think it's great, isn't it, that, you know, podcasts and books and all these different mediums we have now can open conversations that were always hidden, and therefore it's actually helping people when we come forward and we talk and we put ideas together, put our heads together as humans, you know, we're creating something better and giving hope to so many other people. And that's the titles of your books.
Yes, well, that was what I wanted people to read, a book, and it's not just about us. There's over 100 contributors in each book giving their little bits, their little stories. But I just wanted someone to read a book and actually feel that there was hope at the end of it, because all the books I read, I just thought, I don't know, but I do agree with you, Jess. I think whatever we've gone through is for a reason. And I have tried to walk away from this a couple of times, but more keeps finding me and I don't give up. So obviously maybe we haven't done what we were set out to do yet.
Yeah, lovely. And what, just to kind of finalize, what would there be kind of a piece of advice that you'd give to any kind of parent or guardian who perhaps is worried about their child in any way, whether that's anxiety, OCD, an eating disorder, kind of maybe depression? Is there any advice you'd give to them?
Don't leave it.
Yeah.
Don't leave it. If you think something's wrong, you're probably right. Don't leave it, because the longer you leave it, the more ingrained it gets, and the harder it will get to treat. And encourage them to talk.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much, Lynn.
That's all right. Yeah,
thank you so much.
Thank you so much. You have been, do you know what, it's so amazing.
Okay?
Yeah, it's just so lovely to just have kind of such an open conversation and dialogue with you, and hear kind of you and Sam's experiences. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks to all our listeners, and we will see you next week.
We'd like to say a special thank you to Audio Boom for distributing the series, and Popple for our jingle and Raspberry.